From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in 1970, near the beginning of what was known as the Black Power Movement. And in particular, we're talking about how people of African descent choose to wear their hair. For decades up to that point, there was social pressure to straighten hair, to use hot combs and other painful techniques that could take hours. Black men and women faced discrimination for wearing their hair in its natural forms. But as described in a new documentary film called Back to Natural, the Black Power Movement thought to change many things, including the way black people feel about their own hair. There were calls to, quote, decolonize your mind. Children were told that natural hair is beautiful. In some ways, this was a departure, as the film demonstrates. Malcolm X, in a famous speech, said, quote, who taught you to hate the texture of your hair? Who taught you to hate the color of your skin? To such extent you bleach to get like the white man? Who taught you to hate yourself from the top of your head to the soles of your feet? Who taught you to hate your own kind? Who taught you to hate the race that you belong to so much that you don't want to be around each other? You should ask yourself, who taught you to hate being what God made you? End quote. But the Black Power Movement changed all of that, and now America represents and honors all cultures and, yes, all forms of natural hair. If only. Today, black men and women can be fired still for wearing their hair in its natural form. And the film tells the story of hair, politics, and racial identity in black communities and beyond. You can see the film Friday evening at the Little Theater at 6:30 as part of its Black Cinema series. But first, we're discussing it right here on Connections, and we're honored to have on the line with us Dr. Jillian Scott Ward, director of Back to Natural. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Also with us in studio is Rena Golden, who's a founder and artistic director of the Avenue Black Box Theater, host of the Goddess Hour on WAO FM, and co-founder of Kumba Consultants. Rena, welcome back to the program.
Hello.
Also with us is Casey Jones, a reporter at News 10 NBC and member of RABJ, the Rochester Association of Black Journalists. Casey, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
And welcome back to Erica Wilson, producer at News 10 NBC and treasurer of the Rochester Association of Black Journalists. Erica, welcome to you.
Hello. Thank you.
All right. I want to start with Dr. Scott Ward, who is the director of Back to Natural, and we have an opportunity on Friday not only to see the film at 6:30 at the Little Theater. It's only about an hour long, but there's a Skype Q&A with Dr. Scott Ward following the film. And I always like to ask people who create documentaries whom you're really aiming this at. I mean, do you have a hope in your mind, Dr. Scott Ward, about what audiences will look like, will experience, will take from this? Who did you make the film for?
You know, I decided to make the film when I was working as a psychologist at Barnard College, Owens College. And at first I was making it for my students. That's what I thought. But really, I was making it for myself and working through my own healing. And when I started to go to screenings all over the world and started to see the reactions from people, I began to make it for black families. You know, how this really started a conversation about how we see hair in our own families and the sort of hurt that can come up in family dynamics. But truthfully, my assistant editor is a white from Italy, and his reaction to the film was amazing. You know, he was enlightened. His eyes were opened. He said, you know, there was a whole world of things he didn't know was possible, you know, what was happening right in front of him. So, again, I made it for people who look like me, families who look like me, children, grown-ups. But I think that healing on this issue, I think, is very broad.
Well, you know, it felt like it wasn't that long ago. I think we're going on 2 years since we talked about the Chastity Jones case on this program. And I think it's worth bringing this up now because this film, Back to Natural, comes to the Little Theater at a time where our country still has the law protecting companies and organizations that want to fire people for how they wear their natural hair in its hair in its natural form. And the story of that, if you missed that, it's in Alabama. A woman named Chastity Jones lost a job because she refused to change the way she was wearing her hair. Now she's asking the Supreme Court to hear her case, but the Supreme Court said this past session, no, they're not going to take it up here. She was offered a job as a customer service rep at a call center in Mobile, Alabama in 2010, and during the interview, she wore her hair in short, natural locks and was dressed in a business suit and pumps. An HR manager later told her that, quote, dreadlocks violate the company's grooming policy because they tend to get messy. end quote. And she told Jones she couldn't wear her hair that way to work. When Jones refused to cut her locks, they took back the job offer. So she essentially lost the job because of her hair. Now, a federal district court in Alabama dismissed her claim on the grounds that, well, you cannot discriminate by race because you can't change your race. But you can discriminate based on how we wear our hair because you can change that. And the Supreme Court said that was good enough for them. They were not going to weigh in this past year. And I look at a case like that, Dr. Scott Ward, and I have to admit, it seems obvious that that's discrimination to me, because if it took me 2 hours or 3 hours or whatever to change my hair and it was painful and annoying and I didn't want to do it, the notion that I had to conform just to do that every single day would feel like discrimination. How do you view it?
Not only painful and timely, but it impacts our health. So right now we know that the kinds of chemicals that people are using on their hair to get it to these standards that are unnatural for black people are known to be, carcinogenic. They're known to cause reproductive issues, mm-hmm. Related to high levels of fibroids in the black community. So we're not only talking about, so what they're saying is that these are, not immutable characteristics, right? So these things are things that can change.
Right.
But if it takes hours, if it impacts our health, if it impacts our ability to swim and exercise because we're afraid our hair is going to revert, I don't think that that's a reasonable thing to ask people to do.
Well, there's one thing. Let me ask our guests in studio if they're noticing any cultural changes, because it's one thing to talk about what the law does and does not say. It's another to hear how the culture changes. I mean, it was only 3 years ago when Zendaya stepped on the red carpet and the, quote, fashion police correspondent, Juliana Rancic, said that she looked like she smells like patchouli oil or weed. Now, Juliana Rancic apologized for that. I feel like, and maybe I'm naive, there's certainly people who would say that, but I feel like culturally that would be an instant, I think people would be aghast instantly. It took a few days for Juliana Rancic to sort of walk that back. Are we seeing any changes in the culture apart from the law? Rena?
I mean, absolutely we're seeing changes in culture. I mean, there was a time, I work with youth a lot, and there was a time when it was just like little black girls in schools where they wanted to touch my hair, and this would be in, it just out of like awe of like, wow, miss, you wear your hair like that. Like, Even at a very young age, little black girls being taught that their hair had to be straightened or tamed in some way, and they couldn't just wear it the way it actually grows out of your head. And now it's much more common, especially with my older teens, for them to have natural hair and have all kinds. I mean, they know things about, natural hair and grooming it and styling it that I don't even know. And I've been wearing my hair natural for 25 years, So it's a beautiful thing when you see the way the culture is moving toward embracing just something that should just be natural. Yeah, no pun intended, like just natural to be able to wear your hair the way it comes out of your head. There's definitely, I think, culturally in society, a lot more acceptance. A lot, some of it is romanticized and even, fetishized in some way. But at the same time, it's very different than it was 10, 15 years ago in that sense. I'm talking just, in society as a whole. Now, when we talk about, on the job, that's a whole nother thing.
Well, let's talk about that. Erica, are you seeing changes in culture first, and then let's extend that to what Rena brings up, which, by the way, you can tell Rena is going to be a great moderator. You're moderating on Friday night, the discussion post film at 6:30. So the film at 6:30, the discussion right after. So let's talk about how you see the culture, if it's changing, and if you see workplaces changing in their own sort of norms and what's accepted.
Sure. So yeah, I definitely see a change culturally. So ever since in the film. I got to check out the film already. I heard some of the ladies say, when YouTube came around, it changed a lot of things. Like, women were doing tutorials. Women were talking about the products that they're using. They were talking about the styles that they were wearing. It was just, a time for everyone to come together to share what it is that we've been wanting to do and be accepted for forever. So it's definitely changed. In the workplace, I can definitely touch on that. Because I'm behind the scenes, I think that I have the ability and the privilege of looking any way that I want to. I mean, although that sounds kind of crazy, but I will come in with maybe faux locks, like some goddess locks, one, maybe 2 months. And then the next month, I'll come in with like some Bantu knots. And people, of course, coworkers, white coworkers would be like, so is this the same hair that you have like in those little knots that you wear out in the fro? Like, is this, like, how do you do that? And I'm like, for one, I'm thankful I'm able to do that because for people like Casey and maybe anchors, they don't have the privilege of switching up their looks like how a producer does. So a lot of questions are always asked about how I'm wearing my hair. Like today I have 3 ponytails. This morning I had Bantu knots, honestly. But before I got here, it turned out to be 3 ponytails. So it's a difference.
But Erica, I couldn't help but find myself laughing when you're describing, you know, your white colleagues going, is that the same hair? But I wonder if, does that exhaust you? I mean, do you kind of just roll with it? How do you feel about that?
Okay, peace and pumpkin spice. But yes, it's very annoying. Mm-hmm. It's very annoying. And another piece that I saw mentioned in the documentary when one woman was like, you know, like, you have to educate them. That's the only way for them to know. So they can, you let them know and then you stop it right there. But it's been to the point where my hair has been touched. And
yeah, that's way out of bounds.
Exactly. Where I was like, do not touch me. Made an announcement and almost put my dukes up ready to fight.
many of us see that as those microaggressions. And in some mm-hmm. case, macro, like you actually put your hands on me, like on my physical person, which is completely inappropriate.
Yeah.
But even just the microaggressions of constantly having to answer for your hair in the workplace, you know, that's a whole nother thing. Or, you know, the tone of it being different, this constant idea of different and othering, and that being something that is, you know, tends to begin to feel very aggressive toward mm-hmm. you if every day you have to explain something that that someone else is considering, or a large majority of the your coworkers are considering something other than the norm.
Exactly.
So when Erica brings up Casey and people who are on the air who may have different expectations, your hair is straight today. How do you feel about what's changing and what you'd like to see change?
I would definitely agree that there is a cultural shift. More people are comfortable wearing their natural hair, but we still have a long way to go. Mm. And I would say that because when I do wear my hair straight, and when I wear my hair straight, nobody wants to touch my hair. But then when it's curly, can I touch your hair? You know, it's just the same microaggressions. But bigger than that, just in terms of working as a reporter on air, when they hire us, they want us to keep the same consistent look that, you know, they wanted. So when I came here, I decided to, you know, try it out, wear my hair curly naturally, and it was accepted very much by viewers and by my boss. Everybody was, they liked it, or at least they said they did. And it was a breath of fresh air. But then when you look at the bigger picture, you know, I have industry veterans telling me that you're going to have to change your hair if you want to get a job somewhere else. You have to be more consistent, as some would say, if you want to get a job somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And the consistency piece of it is hard as somebody who wants to wear their natural hair, because who knows what's going to come out? You know, you might do a twist out at night and you decide you want to, you know, style it in a different way. And sometimes that's considered a distraction on television, unfortunately. And even when you talk about cultural shifts, just, you know, what was it? A couple years ago, the Army just lifted their ban. The military just lifted their ban on dreadlocks. Mm-hmm. And when I was out in Texas, I found that there were several local school districts, more than at least 5 school districts, that had in their dress code that no afros were allowed, no dreadlocks were allowed. And that's a way of discriminating. Obviously, you're not talking about a white person when you say no afro and no dreads. So it's, like I said, I do see a shift. More people are comfortable wearing it, but we still have so long to go.
Well, in the film, Dr. Jillian Scott Ward, we see over the decades the different trends. That's one thing, to see the different trends, what was kind of moving through what was in fashion. But it's another to say anything can be in fashion and we're not going to fire you for it. We're not going to sort of, you know, people aren't going to conduct themselves around you in this way that otherizes. And I wonder how you feel the progress has or hasn't been made on this, Dr. Scott Ward.
You know, I think it really is not, people don't have a universal experience. First of all, you know, if you are an African descendant, your hair could look a range of ways. There's different hair types, you know, amongst us, even amongst family members. And I think where you live, what kind of employment you have, all really impacts our experience, right? I live in the city. I was working as a mental health provider. I was working in academia. You know, that kind of liberal environment, transitioning to natural, was probably better than if I was living, you know, somewhere else. You know, part of the movie is in South Africa. You would think that their experiences would be better than in New York, and I think in some ways I have more privilege being natural in New York than some of them do being natural, you know, in Cape Town, for example. So I think that it's important to say that we're all going to have a diversity of experiences, and it isn't universal.
Well, the former First Lady, Michelle Obama, has a new book out, and she sat down earlier this month with Jessica Williams and Phoebe Robinson for their Two Dope Queens podcast. And just a few minutes in, they decided that they wanted to ask her about, you know, her routines when she was in the White House and her thoughts on hair and what she had to deal with. And this is just part of that section of former First Lady Michelle Obama talking with Jessica Williams and Phoebe Robinson about not only what Michelle Obama had to deal with hair, but what Michelle Obama thinks people who are white people may not realize is going on. Listen.
There's a whole other life to black hair, black wardrobe in the public eye, you know, so I could go on.
I love it. No, yeah. We love talking about hair. I have like a few questions about that. Like, how often would you say you do get your hair done, a week or a month?
It depends on what the schedule is, you know? So if so here's what I would do. Up days was like, we would do everything in one day because that was the day I was getting my hair and makeup done. And when I was down, it's like, don't call me because I'm not putting heat on my hair and we're not doing any of that. So we would have up days and then we'd do everything. We'd fly to the moon. We'd come back because it's just like, she's got hair and makeup. Let's get her to do it. Tape this, sing this, dance this. So we started scheduling some of the days around up and down days. Okay. So
and down days, where do you like sweatpants?
Oh God, shorts, like, cut off shorts. You know,
Banty
coming
nuts.
Out, scaring butlers. Yeah. It's like, it's just me.
Yeah.
A down day. Just don't freak out.
Oh, I love a down day.
Baseball cap. Yeah. You know that kind of stuff where I could work out, not worry about it, not have to, you know, put eyelashes on and all that sort of stuff. So we structured days around sometimes hair and makeup. So there were some periods where, like holidays, it was like every day because we'd have host parties. We'd open up the White House almost every day from Thanksgiving until like the 19th. December was a tough hair month. So pull it back, give it a break.
Yeah.
You know, so you wind up, you know, as you know, you have a whole strategy.
Yeah.
For hair that I'm sure a lot of white women are sitting over there going, man, I didn't know all that was going on.
Right. They're learning it, and it's great.
All right. So Dr. Scott Ward, I mean, the response of the hosts is they're learning it and it's great. I mean, do you feel the same way about your film that, especially for white audiences, this is an opportunity to understand history and to understand the impact and that that is a good thing for everyone?
I think it's definitely an opportunity. And I think that there is much more curiosity. I think what we're seeing now, just sort of politically, there are people who are like, oh, I didn't realize that, you know, that there was all these race things going on, and I want to open my eyes. So in some ways, you know, we can focus on the bad, or we can focus on all the people who are like, you know, maybe there's some things I should think about and try to understand a little bit deeper. So I think it's a great opportunity, and I've had really great feedback from white audience members.
Well, you know, on the subject of up and down days, I mean, that's that was a, an interesting. But you got a big smile on your face, Rena.
I mean, I know the drill. I mean, but most of that drill actually has more to do with when I wasn't natural than being natural. I mean, it's a lifestyle switch for a lot of us. I know for a lot of people it's trendy, and there's a lot of upkeep that's happening that I don't even deal with. You know, I've seen the YouTube videos. You know, but if you embrace natural as a lifestyle, I think often you start to let go of some of the things that I remember back in my corporate days. That was a big thing of having to have the up day, the day that the hair was very, very groomed. Everything also had to fall in line with it. And I think that's what we're talking about when we talk about some of those aggressions and the attack on self-esteem, I think is what Casey was also bringing up. Just the idea of like what, like there's, that's an actual attack on self-esteem. Mm-hmm. The idea that maybe I won't get the job, maybe I won't get the promotion, you know, people telling you that if you look like your hair, if you let your hair be the way it naturally comes out of your head, then that might prevent you from opportunities. And that's a whole, like, attack on your own self-esteem. So I think one of the things that this film does, and more films like this, and more of, in this movement itself, because it really is a movement, and I love that. I love that Dr. Scott Ward says back to natural, because it's not, you know, it's not
becoming
natural. It's this is going back to who I really am. But mm-hmm. but this is a step toward healing. You know, it's a step toward healing. It's a step toward positive and a healthy outlook on what your identity really truly is.
Well, and on that subject, in the documentary, we find out that sales of chemical relaxers dropped 18.6% just from 2013 to 2015.
Where's the applause meter or something like that? Because we're talking about toxic chemicals. Like, mm-hmm. Devin, we're not just talking about a look. We're talking about actually putting toxic chemicals into your body on a regular basis that is impacting your health. I mean, this is like, you know, this is huge. Mm-hmm. This is revolutionary.
From age of four, by the way. From the age of four.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got a relaxer around that time, and I remember I couldn't scratch before. If you scratch your hair before, then it burns. And
because toxins are going into your scalp, into mm-hmm. your blood,
and then your brain. Afterwards, when it burns, you got little blisters on your head. Ugh. And little scabs, mm-hmm. and it was just. But after I was pretty, that's what I remember. I remember my hair being styled after, whoa. And I enjoyed how I looked. Mm. And,
do you know any 4-year-olds? Would you do that to a 4-year-old?
No,
never.
No, mm.
But it was and is happening
mm-hmm. to protect them from racism. Mm. Think about that.
Mm. Yeah, I wasn't getting perms that young, but we were getting our hair pressed out for picture day. Every picture day, me and my sister would get our hair pressed out, and we would wear it in, you know, ponytails.
Oh yeah,
but
that's true.
It was still straightened mm-hmm. and
a hot comb.
Right. Oh. Oh.
This is a whole nother. I gotta remember.
But my
there's
mama
a generational
got the,
gap here. Yeah, there's
comb.
A generational gap. That's right. There's mm-hmm. flat irons now. Before it was the straightening comb that went on the stove. Okay, oh. Got hot. There was not plugged in. Mm-hmm. Got had to get hot enough to you could hear it sizzling.
With the grease.
With the
blue
magic.
Not all shame, but.
Blue magic.
And so many people don't want to do it, but, you know, like Dr. Ward said, they feel like they have to do it mm-hmm. to avoid racism. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it is great that more people are feeling, you know, more comfortable. And I did like what Dr. Ward said about how everybody's experience isn't the same. Mm-hmm. Because I remember earlier this year, a girl, she was in Michigan, I want to say. She was a reporter, and she tweeted out, like, I'm wearing my hair natural for the first time on air. She was a very light-skinned girl. She had very long hair and a very wavy curl pattern mm-hmm. as opposed to a tightly coiled mm-hmm. Curl pattern. So
what some would refer to as nappy.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yes. And
my hair.
My hair.
How about
happy
my hair
to
too.
Be nappy.
Mine yep. too. And she received a lot of backlash because she was making this. She actually went viral for saying that she was wearing her hair natural, whereas, I mean, I tweeted out that I was wearing my hair natural. Nobody picked that up. Today's Show didn't pick that up. Mm. And I mean, I think a lot of women said the same thing. Like, wow, here's my afro. Nope, I didn't go viral. But here's this girl who has this wavy curl pattern. Now all of a sudden everybody cares. Like, power to her.
Right.
So I think some people feel like, depending on what type of hair you have, depending on how fair your skin is, that depends on the amount of support that you'll get for going natural.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, let me ask Casey a few questions here, because when we talk up and down days, do you do up and down days like Michelle Obama talked about?
Yes, I definitely have up and down days. I'm trying to make my down days a little more like my up days, or backwards. Up days more like my down days. Either way, I'm trying to, you know, get more comfortable wearing my natural hair all the time. And for me, it's really a process of learning the best way to do it. And that's why it's so great that things like YouTube are out, because mm-hmm. there's other women. I just type in what my hair type is, and there's plenty of other bloggers and YouTubers that, you know, can teach me how to do my hair. So I definitely understand that and identify with that. I'm not quite comfortable wearing it every day like that. Mm-hmm. I wish I was. If I saw more representation, I think I would be more comfortable. But when I watch CNN, or when I watch the Today Show, or when I watch CBS This Morning, I don't see Gayle King wearing her hair natural. Mm-hmm. I don't see Chanel Jones wearing her hair natural. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's where I would like to be. So it really makes me think about, you know, is it okay for me to wear my hair like this? So I do get happy when I see, you know, other women in the television news industry wearing their natural hair. But I haven't seen a lot of people, you know, main anchors wearing their natural hair. You might see a reporter out in the field, but you don't see a lot of people sitting at the desk doing that.
So let me ask you a question. I'm going to follow with Dr. Scott Ward to see what she thinks about this. Because it would be so easy for me, you know, guy who never has to answer questions about what I wear and what my hair or mm-hmm. lack of hair or whatever, to say, hey, wear your hair natural. You know, show them. You say that you've got institutional support at News 10 NBC, which, by the way, good for them, and I'm glad to hear that you feel that way at work. And I think that, it should be everywhere. Mm-hmm. I don't know why we're giving plaudits for that, but at the same time, okay.
So most people don't feel that way, though.
I'm acknowledging that, absolutely. Yeah. So I'm glad you feel that way. So it would be easy for me to say, well, you know, if you want to make that change, it's better for you, it's also better for people of African descent who are watching you, and young viewers who are watching you as a role model. But then, you know, what I'm urging you to do might actually put your career at risk. And that doesn't mean, again, that HEC is going to call you tomorrow and say you're out of a job. But if industry veterans are telling you it's going to be hard for you to get promoted within to a desk job or to another market that you may want to go to, mm-hmm. if you do that, well, it's easy for me to tell you to do that. In the same way that, you know, when I watched Milk, Harvey Milk used to tell gay people in San Francisco, we need you to come out. But they're risking their jobs and they're risking their family relationships. Do you feel, do you feel at all any sense of how we're going to move this needle? Do you feel a push-pull that way? I'm just curious now your mindset with that, because I think it's unfair to you for people to try to tell you, well, someone like me to tell you, hey, wear your hair natural. It's fine with everybody. It's fine with me.
Well, look, my mindset was I knew that in my organization I had privilege. I wasn't going to get probably the kinds of backlash, and so I took that as an opportunity, and I did it. But you have to understand that just surviving as a person of color, as a black woman in the society, is emotionally taxing.
Yes.
every interaction is about what do I need to hide about my truth in order for this interaction to be okay. Let me not talk too loud. Let me not, like, startle anyone. And it perpetuates really people not being able to understand us and be around our authentic selves. I mean, that is a reality. That's not universal, but that's a reality for a lot of people. And so it keeps us from knowing each other, right? And that keeps us from being our best selves at work and at school. And so I think it benefits everyone to allow whoever we are to be authentic, so people get used to it. You know, they want to touch our hair because the world is really segregated. Where we get our hair done is segregated. Where we live is segregated. Where we go to school is segregated. So we don't know each other.
Makes a lot of sense.
So, Casey, how do you feel about it?
I think that I, so I like my hair both ways, and I would prefer, I'm a less maintenance kind of person. So for me, wearing my hair natural is a lot more maintenance than wearing it straight. Whenever I straighten it, it probably takes me an hour and a half, one time a week. Whereas if I wear my hair natural, it takes me maybe 30 minutes every day to style it, to do how I want. So for me, I think it's a process of learning what works best for me. I won't say that I will never wear my hair natural, but I think it's just a process of, you know, learning what works best for me and seeing an industry shift. When I see more, you know, people doing it, I unfortunately have to be a follower because, I mean, I'm only 25. I'm only 3 years in the game here, whereas there's people 40 years in the game. They've never even worn their natural hair. Mm-hmm. So more than that in the game. So, I mean, I would love to lead the charge, but I don't know if I'm, you know, if that's for me. I never want to make myself count it out because of something I'm doing, trying to make a statement. And it's hard because I actually receive a lot more support from, you know, white people than I do black people a lot of times about my hair. A lot of my loved ones anyway are always like, you shouldn't wear your hair like that. You should wear it straight. So, you know, it's hard for me. I would love to wear my hair natural every day, but it's hard for me when I hear the, you know, the comments from my family, my friends. So it's great that there's a cultural shift because when I get more support, you know, professionally, personally, I'd feel more comfortable.
What do you think that's coming from your family and friends?
It's what they've been taught. You know,
absolutely.
It's my mother got a perm, you know, when she was in high school, and she liked the way her hair looked. So she did my hair the same way. And it, you know, it was easier. I mean, you help. She was trying to help me avoid discrimination and racism. And although she didn't do it all the way, I'm sure that, you know, she saved me from a lot of negative comments and crazy looks. And, you know, it's just what we've always known.
Let's get her to view the movie. I'd love to know how the family dynamic shifts when you can get, because there's a generation gap. Mm-hmm. And when people over 50 watch my movie, it's heartbreaking and heartwarming. Mm. Because they're thinking about issues they weren't allowed to think about before.
Mm.
Broad generalization.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But I also think that sometimes when my family, you know, my mom, my grandma, when they see the afro, they think that I'm trying to be Angela Davis or something. So they kind of like see it as like a political statement because that's what they grew up knowing the afro connection. As. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it is really there's an educational piece that needs to happen. So I'm definitely going to get them to watch. My mom, she's listening right now, actually. She's going to watch it with me.
Nice. Let me do this. We're late for our only break. I want to tell you exactly, if you're just joining us, why we're here. And as we go to break, I'm going to read an email from Mona, and I'm going to ask our panel to jump in on this when we come back from the break. We're here because this coming Friday, November 30th, 6:30 p.m. at the Little Theater, they're showing the film that we're talking about, Back to Natural. And the director of the film, Dr. Jillian Scott Ward, is on the line with us. And Dr. Scott Ward will be doing a Skype Q&A with the panel after that film. The film's about 60, 70 minutes long. That's it. Historical, powerful, for all audiences. 6:30 Friday night. Then the panel discussion will be moderated by Rena Golden, who is with us in studios, founder and artistic director of the Avenue Black Box Theater and host of the Goddess Hour on Wayo, co-founder of Kumba Consultants. Casey Jones and Erica Wilson are with us from News 10 NBC, a reporter and a producer, and members, and Erica's the treasurer of the Rochester Association of Black Journalists. So as we go to break, here is Mona's email to the panel. She says, can you ask the panel to discuss the challenges black women have, myself included, in dealing with the internalized racism that you discover or uncover when going natural? I had a really hard time seeing myself as attractive in the beginning. Now, of course, I know I'm amazing, but Mona talked about how much of a struggle that was, and our panelists are going to address that when we come back. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, we talk about stereotypes of modern college students. There are a number of op-eds professors writing that college students really are too soft and require too much care and safe handling. But others say that is an unfair stereotype. We discuss it. Then second hour, the story of Oumuamua, that strange alien object that passed through our solar system. Scientists think it might really be aliens. We'll talk about it. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. So I'll start with Dr. Julian Scott Ward and an email from Mona talking about how hard it was for her to see herself that way, Dr. Scott Ward. And of course, now she knows. And since we know Mona, I can confirm, of course, she is amazing. But that, you know, that self-perception, that internalized racism was very difficult for her. And I think it would be instructive to hear the whole panel on this. I'll start with Dr. Julian Scott Ward.
You know, I think that that is such an honest letter and so true for so many people because, listen, we're all socialized in the United States and actually abroad, including, certain segments of Africa where Europeanness, whiteness is the norm. You know, that's just the reality. And so what that does to us from a very young age, for some of us who don't have the protection of family members or strong communities, because that's not everyone's experience, but some of us who don't have that protection will internalize these messages. And the only way to address it is by facing yourself, right? And unlearning those things and learning your history and getting in community with people to talk about that hurt. Honestly, talking to your elders. You know, I think it's a process and it's worth it.
Mm-hmm. Let's ask the panelists in studio. Rena, what do you make of Mona's email?
It's really tough to listen to over and over again in this day and age. And even what we're all describing here still is exactly that, the details of the internalized racism that she's referring to, that makes it difficult for you to look at yourself and say exactly the way I was born, you know, or what naturally happens to my hair or my skin when I'm in the sun, you know, is beautiful, is okay, is acceptable. And, you know, I think one thing that that Dr. Scott Ward just said about even just talking about European standards as the norm, but it's also those standards are of the privileged class. So that's a whole nother thing, the idea that I have to look this way, behave this way, dress this way, so that I can somehow gain some privilege, you know, in the world, so that I can just be, so I can just survive. And that's a whole nother piece too. So I do feel like, you know, what's hopeful is when you hear that it may have taken me a while, but I'm there now. So that's what makes it worth it to be able to say, okay, like I said, when I look around and see young girls, you know, who before were like, Miss, like, how you wear your hair like that? You know, what you're going to do to your hair? To now being like, oh, this is cool. I can do this too. And then coming to a place where they start to see themselves differently. I think that's the part that's really powerful. But we also have to look at the idea of how we actually claim our own privilege, you know, in this movement. And I think that's the next level to this, of not just being able to sort of undo some of the damage that's been done, but how do we actually claim privilege and say, you know what, I don't want to be in the spaces that don't accept me for exactly who I am. Mm-hmm. When we start to choose our career paths, and this is no shade, it's like we have to let our passion actually direct our path. And sometimes that means that, you know, wait a second, I want the job or the career that actually accepts all of who I am, and or the parts that I'm most passionate about, at least. So if that's a really strong passion of yours, like it is for me, I left corporate because at the time it was just not something that was going to work. I was growing out of this idea of conforming and fitting into this mold that was a very whitewashed mold. And no matter how hard I try, I'm not going to be white. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to wake up one morning and suddenly I'm white and my hair is naturally straight and my skin is lighter, and I'm not trying to have that happen. And so choosing to say, wait a second, this actually, it may not be my path, because it actually is not, you know, it doesn't even fit me. It doesn't even fit my body, mm-hmm. you know?
Erica?
Yeah. I remember wanting my hair to just be so much longer and so much thicker, and I wanted this curl pattern, and I wanted to wear a fro, but my mom liked it curlier, you know, not just a fro, but you better have some curls in that fro somewhere where I can see, you know, something kind of tight. So I kind of had a struggle. And I still struggle with my natural hair today, like where I want it just a little bit thicker. But I'm actually educating myself right now, too, to find the proper products to use and which styles and what kind of preparation I need to do to have certain type of curls and things like that. So I go back and forth with a lot of hairstyles, and that's something that I truly appreciate. Sometimes I like to wear my sew-ins because it gives me time to keep my hair, you know, put up from having to touch it every
day. Protective styling.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And that's something that I think a sew-in serves as really good protection to natural hair. Mm-hmm. If you're doing it properly, you know, if you're keeping your scalp oiled and things like that. But
it's also historically cultural. We also don't go back and look at, you know, those of us who are super like, you know, Afrocentric. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we miss that. Actually, that's been a part of our culture historically. Mm-hmm. The idea of adding hair as in, you know, some sort of adornment, embellish, adding actual hair or uh-huh. textures and things to the hair. Not to interrupt you, but that's a real thing. You know, like that's part of our culture, our tradition as mm-hmm. well.
I mean, that's what we do when we get our braids, you know, when we're getting, I mean, I used to wear like micro braids or kinky twists and things like that. And we got like our kinky hair added to our hair to do the style that we wanted. So today I get, like I said, I had Bantu knots when I woke up this morning, but right now my hair is in 3 ponytails. So it's a struggle, even if it's not mentally, physically, it's work that you have to put in, and it comes with the struggle. But I appreciate being able to wear my natural hair and being able to have different looks. And that's what I use it to my best ability to be creative. I like being creative.
And can I follow up with one question before I kick it to Casey to respond to Mona's email? When you talk about, you know, when she talks about sort of self-image and how she viewed herself and what internalized racism mm-hmm. maybe built up and did over the years, it took some time to sort of process through that. Now, if you deal with, you know, as you say, microaggressions, with people who are making remarks, even if they have good intentions, that might make you feel a certain way, does it make you feel any less of yourself in terms of how you feel about your look, your hair, your beauty? Or do you feel like, you know, you process that pretty well?
Yeah, no, I definitely stand my ground. But I think about like, oh, today they're probably going to ask me, Erica, how did you do this? Or Erica, why is it like that? You know, so those things cross my mind. But it doesn't impact how I feel about myself and the people that look like me, because I just love it. It's something that, honestly, white women can't do. White people can't do. They can't twist up their hair like ours and get the texture that we get. And they can't look the way that we look. So we have to use that to our advantage. Mm-hmm. So I like to think about, you know, myself as an original woman, you know.
And Erica, I only laughed when you did the voice with your coworkers because you're funny, but not because it's funny that it keeps happening. Casey, how would you respond to Mona's email?
So I think when I even first, so my whole life I wanted to have curly hair. I always had all these light skin friends with curly hair. So I always wanted to have that hair. Wasn't really happy that I didn't have it. I had a hairstylist tell me in college, you know, if you stop getting relaxers, you'd probably have curly hair. I'm like, me? Really? And he was right, but it wasn't the type of curly hair I thought I was going to have. Mm. I had this idea of having like this 3C hair, which is more of a looser curler, a loose curl pattern, you know, that's bigger hair and, you know, a little bit more accepted. So when I actually grew out my natural hair and I saw the way it looked, it was a struggle. I mean, from the length to the thickness, to the color, to the spots that were missing on my edges because of all of the years of damage. Mm-hmm. It took a long time for me to look in the mirror and just be happy. I mean, I just learned that I wasn't supposed to have whatever hair type it was that I wanted to have. And I have this type. I have 4A, and I just got to stick with it, and I got to learn how to do it. So I wouldn't even say I'm 100% there when it comes to natural hair. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say that I look in the mirror when my hair is natural and I think that I'm the most beautiful girl in the world. I wouldn't say that I do. And I think for me to get 100% there, I just have to wear it more and just build up that confidence by wearing it more. But then there's that whole, you know, the whole piece of what about my job? What about my next job? You know, what about everything else? So, I mean, it's really a struggle, but I think it all starts with just loving yourself and, you know, loving yours.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm working on it.
And you laws. Got this, Casey.
It's not just right. loving yourself. It's actually laws.
Yeah.
And you know, I think it's important that we don't individualize mm-hmm. and say there's something wrong with me because I can't accept it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, I think that we live in a culture that makes it very difficult mm-hmm. and we all need to take responsibility for that as a culture and not being just about ourselves.
Well, Dr. Scott Ward, in our last few minutes, I'd like to ask you and all of the panelists what they think sort of the next steps here are, because I think your film tells this important story and how this issue has sort of played out in this country and really other countries as well over the decades. But I mentioned earlier in the program that the U.S. Supreme Court declined to hear Chastity Jones's case earlier this year, which means that the decision to basically take her job away because she would not straighten her hair stood, that it's protected by law. So that's one area that I suspect could end up back in the courts at some point. I mean, you certainly think as time goes on that these kind of stories are going to go back in the court. Where else do you see the law going or needing to change, Dr. Scott Ward?
You know, that's an amazing question. I'm actually going to be meeting with the New York City Commission on Human Rights this week to screen the movie. Because they are getting an increasing number of legal cases about this in the courts. And so it is my dream and my passion to work with the legal system to help understand that if it takes time, and Black people spend 9 times more money on hair products and have significant and serious health impacts from using these products since, you know, from the age of, you know, 4, we need to consider that reality when we think about what we are requiring people to do to be employed and to go to school. So legally, I think that we need to move forward. And also, you know, using the film and dialogue within our community and between communities to heal. Because I think that what we don't talk about is, you know, the problem in the white community that who Black people are in every respect is a problem. Mm-hmm. Like we can't live in a society where we just have to pretend we're something we're not in order to you know, be safe and to participate in society, because that's a continuation of segregation in my mind.
Mm-hmm. I think that's beautifully said. Mm-hmm. Rena Golden.
I totally agree with what she's saying as well. I mean, it's a really scary thought that case, that precedence in some ways, but the scarier piece is that it actually confirmed our worst fears, that our worst fears as Black women are still with us today. The idea that I can't be safe, you know, I can't be secure, I can't be promoted, I can't get a job, I can't, you know, my life is at stake if I just wear my very natural hair. It definitely is. At the end of the day, for me though, it's worth it. It's absolutely worth it. I think it has informed every part of my life. The idea that this is a lifestyle that when I embraced it, I came closer and closer to my true self, and that's allowed me to do the things that I'm doing today. And can I plug Giving Tuesday at all? Is that possible?
Go ahead. You got the mic, Rena. I'm not going to take the mic away from you.
It's Giving Tuesday. So even in this moment, as we're here contributing our thoughts and everything, just remember that there are small organizations of people who decided to do the thing that they were most passionate about that are in need today of your help. So Giving Tuesday, please visit my Facebook page so you can find out more about the Avenue Black Box Theater. Thank you.
No nice. Problem. Erica.
I think it just comes with examples. I am looking forward to moving up in the industry that I'm working in. My ultimate goal is to run my own news station. So, and I'll definitely be rocking my natural hair in that position. So I just think that we have to make sure that our, it starts in the homes. So families have to make sure that they're telling these young women and these young girls and young boys that they're beautiful just the way that they are, and that it doesn't come with, you know, having to wanting to be like something that you're not, because you are who you are. So we just have to teach the young people, and we have to set examples for what it is that we want to be known for.
Casey. Definitely, it starts with the kids, 100%. I mean, even when you look, you know, across the country, there's cases of kids being kicked out of school or mm-hmm. suspended for their natural hair, you know, wearing dreadlocks, wearing afros, putting extensions in. So I think it's really, I think people have to realize the impact that they're having. I think if they start to understand what doing things like that to children can do, you know, ultimately to them, maybe they'd show a little bit more compassion and empathy. Like, what if that was your child? And I mean, if you just Google child kicked out of school for natural hair, you'll see dozens of cases, and not one of them is white. Mm-hmm. So that just kind of gives you an idea of, you know, how big the problem is. Besides the whole, you know, besides just us keeping our jobs, it's, you know, the kids, they can't even go to school. So I think we just have to educate the kids on loving themselves and change policies to allow us to be ourselves.
From WHEC, from News 10 NBC, Casey Jones and Erica Wilson. They are also with the Rochester Association of Black Journalists, which is sponsoring the film. Thanks to both of you for being here this hour. Thank you. Our thanks to Rena Golden, who is going to be moderating the event on Friday night. It's always nice to see you. Thank you, Rena. And by the way, if you want, she mentioned it, but you got to look up the Avenue Black Box Theater if you want to learn more about what Rena is doing lately. She's always doing something. Dr. Jillian Scott Ward is the director of Back to Natural, Friday night, 6:30 at the Little Theater. You can see it there. Dr. Scott Ward, thank you for making the film, and thanks for taking the time for the program this hour.
Thank you so much.
Our thanks to Rob Braden, engineer, Megan Mack, producer. Have a great afternoon.